This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Dr. Psych Mom Show. Today, I'm going to address a little nice little question that I got asked for a change. Usually, the questions I get asked on social media are things like, why are you so stupid? But this one said, how do you have the patience to keep explaining couples to each other or partners to each other and the dynamics of relationships or something? You know, something that said that I had a lot of patience and she wondered why I did. Or maybe it was rhetorical. But either way, I took it as a nice comment, thankfully. Those do happen too, although not with the frequency of the others. And I thought about it, you know, and I've thought about it before. And to me, it's not possibly what you might think. So I thought it might be interesting to discuss. And before I do that, please do subscribe to my podcast. You get a quarter more episodes. That's quite a lot of listening. And 155 plus subscriber episodes. Of course, there's oral sex on women, what you don't know. And loads and loads of other ones, some about sex, some about relationships, some about, you know, other aspects of life. And most recently was sex positive versus high libido. And those are really not the same. And which one you should look for instead, you know, I mean, some people obviously are going to say basically, well, I'm fucked because my partner is neither one. And what am I going to do? And I do, you know, touch on that as well. But it's especially good for people who are looking for partners. All right. Anyway, so why am I so interested in helping couples and have always been interested, even though you may not know this, but a lot of psychologists, a lot of therapists in general, psychologists, only one type of therapist. There's LCSWs, social workers, and LPCs, counselors, and all these people. I have a lot of them working at my practice, people, different sorts of therapists, right? There's even another degree, a doctor of psychology, a PsyD. I'm a PhD in clinical psychology. So there's just all sorts of therapists out in the world. And there's coaches too. I mean, there's lots and lots of people. And with all of those people, a lot of them don't like working with couples. Why? Because it's very high conflict. You know, I mean, I get yelled at more within that dynamic. Of course, most people don't yell at their therapist, but when I do, a lot of it is within couples work because tempers are flaring. Often both people will act so much more nice and sweet and calm when they're alone. They're like a different person than when they're sitting next to their spouse. It's just they can't even control themselves. They're crying, they're screaming, all sorts of things. And a lot of people get very uncomfortable with that, and they do not like that tone in the room of the high tension and fighting, you know, and they don't really want to be any sort of referee. And they also, a lot of people don't like to talk about sexual issues, and sexual issues come up a lot in counseling. So, you know, between not liking conflict and not wanting to talk about sex, many people don't want to work with couples, and especially not with, quote, high conflict couples, which is something that I work with. And that usually means people who had really bad childhoods, and now they don't really know how to have a relationship without screaming at each other and yelling at each other, etc., or being completely detached from one another. The various couples that I write about in my Couples You Meet in Counseling series, you know? And so why do I want to always, a lot of my posts and podcasts try to explain partners to each other why your husband does X, why your wife does X, and of course, I work with couples all the time. Well, it's not out of any sort of, you know, great love of sitting there watching people yell at each other. In fact, like, if you're a child, as I've discussed, I grew up as an adult child of dysfunctional family myself, you know, And there was a lot of marital conflict. So it's certainly not great, you know. Of course, then again, I joke that whatever Tiger Woods said, you need like 10,000 hours of practice to be good at something. While the adult children of dysfunctional families have that before they're like 4 years old, you know, in terms of comfort and familiarity with dysfunctional dynamics. So it's certainly not something that is as upsetting as or as scary maybe or off the wall or unusual as it would be to somebody that didn't grow up with marital conflict, witnessing marital conflict. And that is a lot of really the main reason why I work with couples and why I don't really work with couples that don't have children. So what do I mean? I mean to stop the fighting in front of the children, to stop the dysfunction and the coldness and the lack of affection and the one-upmanship and the snide comments and the violence and all of these things that children witness, because I know what it's like to be that child. And when I'm working with parents, it's a major, major thing that we put out there is we do not want to raise the child in a house where there is fighting. It's very, very hard on a child to grow up like that. You're almost ensuring that they have marital conflict later on and that they don't understand that relationships can be calm and loving because they never saw that. And if you can stop fighting in front of the kids, that's also a major milestone in understanding that you have the ability to control your own behavior as a couple or as an individual, right? So the main reason that I focus on couples so much is because I feel that it has a large impact on the children. And those children don't deserve to be in that situation. So if you are deeply unhappy and your child is witnessing that, they basically become an unhappy adult, more or less. That's their only template for being an adult. And if they see that each parent they love, but then these people can't get along with each other, well, shit, what hope do they have, you know? And then sometimes they end up not loving one parent because it's just easier to assume that one is the victim and one is the perpetrator. Sometimes they're told that, you know, and all of these things really mess with the kids' minds, and the kids don't deserve it, right? They didn't choose to be born in a home with a lot of yelling instead of a nice home like they see in their friends' houses. When you're an adult child of dysfunctional family, when your parents are yelling, when they're cold, when they're mocking, when they're critical of each other, you're so jealous of the other families, you know, the families where the mom and the dad hug each other and everybody's joking and it's calm. At the very least, it's calm. When your parents are fighting, you can barely even do your homework, you know? It's just so stressful, and the aftermath is stressful. And then frequently you learn the only way to get anybody to stop yelling is to act out yourself or to get the hell out of the house. So it's funny, a lot of guys that I talk to, men in particular, when they say that the home is very conflictual, I said, oh, when did you start to go over to your girlfriend's houses? And they're usually surprised, but that's a very common male thing. Because boys are allowed to do more stuff, at least in the generation of the adults that I speak to, you know, boys are allowed more leeway, whereas a girl would not always be allowed to go over her boyfriend's house all the time. For in many families, a boy, he starts having girlfriends at like 15, he's part of that family, he's out. He goes from one girlfriend to the other and he never has to go to his crazy house pretty much. And it's a very common sort of escape mechanism. So anyway, working with couples really, really allows me to impact children more than working with children directly, because when I used to work with children directly, it's very, very upsetting. You can't really make them do anything because you can't even get them in. If the parent decides that they do not like the idea that they're being discussed in therapy or that the child is trying to change any of their behaviors, the parent takes the kid out. You know, you don't see the kid anymore. And there's only so much you can work on a kid's anxiety if the parent is anxious. So you're talking to a kid about their anxiety, and then they go right back into a house where the parents are so anxious that they can't possibly execute on anything you're telling them to do in terms of any exposure therapy or anything like that. Now, of course, some parents are very supportive. But the ones that aren't, you know, it's kind of, there's really no point for the kid to be in therapy. I feel like therapy is a lot better for the parent than for the child, because the parent sets the frame for the child. Kind of like Suzuki violin lessons, you know, like the parent teaches the child during the week. But the point is that the parent is the inflection point. Most kids would not need therapy in the first place if they were not learning dysfunctional things from their parents. Obviously, there's a huge genetic component. But so think about it. So let's say that a child is almost exactly like a parent, right? Genetically. Now, it's not 100%. But let's just say for the sake of argument, a child is genetically just like the parent, just a clone, really, of an anxious parent. So how good can they get, really, without, let's say we're not using medicine. Because we should, I mean, if it helps your kid, but forget it. Let's just say that the only things that we have there to work on are therapy. Should the therapy go to the child or to the parent? Well, I mean, sure, you could do both, but we don't have a million, you know, man hours here and infinity money. If the parent was to go through therapy, really, really think about how they could change their own frame, how they could act differently, how they could change both their cognitions and their behaviors with CBT. And then they taught that to the child. Well, then the child don't have to be in therapy, right? And the parent is exactly like the child in this scenario. And so therefore, any as good as the parent can get, is the child can get even better because they're younger, right? And they're healthier and more energy and all of that. The parent is changing the frame. If only the child were to be in therapy, then they're in there for 50 minutes a week, 45 minutes a week, whatever, and then they go back to the same anxious house. So it's basically erases what they do. As they get older, as you become a teenager, then, you know, the therapist can be more impactful even if your parent is still acting dysfunctional because, again, you start turning more to peers, teachers, coaches. You're looking at getting out to college, you know. But when you're a little kid and you're trying to learn something in therapy but then it's not done at home, it's like almost impossible to make any progress. There's this new program, relatively new, and maybe it's not, but relatively, I've heard of it relatively recently in recent years called SPACE, and it is about anxious. It teaches parents how to parent their anxious kids differently. And instead of coddling and enabling, which they do with the best of intentions because the child seems so upset all the time, they actually are more, it's more like exposure therapy. They understand that taking away opportunities is hurting things and in fact making the child feel more weak and more fragile, and it exacerbates anxiety symptoms. And so basically the parents are learning how to parent these anxious children differently. And so that's how I think that it is best, it is most impactful for children, is for the parent to go to therapy and understand this stuff so that they could parent differently, right? And couples therapy basically is that, but for relationships. You're teaching a child about relationships by helping the parents be better at relationships. So then they model the relationship, they model a healthy relationship and thereby teach the child how to have a happy relationship. I had a meme. I did a meme, I forget when, but it said something like, how much would you pay for your child to have an internship in how to have a happy and healthy relationship? You know, a little class. How much would you pay? How many hundreds of dollars would you pay? How many thousands of dollars would you pay to know that your child had an increased likelihood of being able to take the things they would learn and have their own happy marriage one day? Well, that's your couple's counseling budget. Right. So if you would pay $2,000 for that, you know, then that's your couple's counseling budget. And most people would pay infinity. You know, most people would anything that they could, they would pay to massively increase the chances that their child had a happy relationship one day and had skills to be in a happy relationship. And that is what you can do via showing a happier, healthier marriage to your child. And so then, it's even in the area of sex, right? So obviously your child doesn't know what you do in the bedroom, but your child can pick up on what sex negativity is, what discomfort with physical affection is. That's a huge part of a relationship. And so when I'm working with people on their sex life, they feel closer, they feel more connected. They're showing that to the child, and they're also showing an increased comfort with intimacy and closeness outside of the bedroom, because if you're having sex, then that carries outside of the bedroom to hugging and touching and all of that. And you're also transmitting a more sex-positive view to your children directly if you've learned how to have a more sex-positive view in therapy. So, you know, as I get older, particularly since I've had my own children, it's not as compelling to work with people without kids. It's still interesting, and eventually they may have kids, you know, or not. And then I'm working with basically, you know, the kids who got fucked up by their parents. There's always a kid involved, whether it's like the child that's inside somebody or whether it's the child that they have or both. In most cases, both. You could still feel empathy for the child that they were, and they got all fucked up by their parents, right? But usually there's something even more salient and immediate, which is that they have children. This couple has children, and the children are watching. They're always watching, and you only have this small window to change the path to make your home into a loving and happy home where they see that there's two people happy with each other instead of a contentious, bitter, disconnected, cold, and frequently volatile and scary home. The cortisol that's released, you know, in the brain and the bloodstream of a child who's witnessing marital conflict, that changes how you are as a person. You become hypervigilant later on. You jump more in a, you know, if somebody says boo, you jump so much more if you're a kid that's used to like conflict and scariness at home. You know, just talk to any adult child of a dysfunctional family, whether that's alcoholism or marital conflict or personality disorder or depression or anything. You become super attuned to negativity in your environment because you always had to look out for it to protect yourself. So via couples counseling, you're really changing the dynamic and the tenor of the home. So every kid deserves to grow up in a calm and loving home. The baseline is calm, you know, calm and loving toward them. That's a baseline. And then after that, you can add on loving between the parents. And then that's the ideal. It doesn't need to be more than that. It doesn't need to be, you know, so it's interesting how many people will pay extensive, you know, for extensive enrichment activities and, you know, extracurriculars and all of this. But then the kid gets home and they're screaming at each other. How do you think that kid's going to do in life, you know? They're going to do worse than if they had none of the extracurriculars and a calm, loving home because they can't think straight at home. They just can't think straight. They're scared. They don't like to be at home. They're learning that people can't be trusted, that relationships can't be trusted. Who cares if they know how to play a sport? You know, I mean, what the hell is a sport going to do? Maybe the sport will get them the hell out of your house on a scholarship to college. But, you know, that's a low chance. And then what? And they're going to end up in a shitty relationship in their D1 school. You know, I mean, like, what? Well, it's the most important thing. I just cannot even tell you guys how I can't overemphasize how I think that the best way to be a good parent is to have a calm, stable, loving home. And of course, some people say, but what if I'm a single parent? And I have a whole podcast about that. So that's certainly not any bad thing. And I have a whole podcast, How Do I Teach My Children About Happy Relationships If I'm a Single Parent? Just put in the word single in the Spotify search bar and you'll get that one. But anyway, I hope you guys appreciated this podcast and enjoyed it. And perhaps it made some of you guys more likely to try couples counseling or to even think about it differently if your child does show something like anxiety or depression, that if that is manifesting in them, possibly the best way to treat it is via the parent that also likely has those same symptoms if you look internally. I almost never have, it's almost impossible to have an anxious child that doesn't have an anxious parent. It's just impossible. Where would they learn it from, you know? And if they didn't learn it, where would they get it from genetically? You know, it's nature and nurture, like everything. All right, guys, I'll talk to you soon. Have a great day. Bye-bye.